You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting in southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And I'm going to ask all of you to go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in if they live in the broadcast range of 860, or they can listen live on the internet simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Later today, you will receive a rebroadcast of today's program, and I encourage you, especially that we're coming up on Thanksgiving, to email it to family members and friends, because this is the way we continue to have a growing amount of people involved in our effort. Also, I want to take this opportunity to say thank you to everybody that stops me in my travels. This is getting very, very interesting. And I want to thank our panel members, Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, small business advocate and a SCORE mentor, Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, is always there to help us along, make sure this program is number one. And I'm Michael Blihash. And as you know, during the last few months, we've had the honor to have a very special guest with us, Curtis Ellis, who is the executive director of the American Jobs Alliance, a well-known journalist. He's worked in Congress, on television shows, on radio programs, and on various political campaigns, and has been a senior advisor, policy advisor for President Trump. And I want to tell you that I get a lot of good, positive comments. Last week's show about the education end of things really went very, very well. Maybe we'll be able to talk about that additionally, if not today, in the upcoming weeks, because people have some very, very important decisions that they have to make in the future about how the future dollars that are coming from the states and the feds to the local communities are going to be governed. Well, tomorrow is not only the fourth Thursday of November, it's Thanksgiving Day, and it's time for us to give thanks and to be united with family, friends, and neighbors. And then, of course, this Friday is Black Friday, a time to focus on American-made everything possible, so American-made and, of course, America's businesses all can benefit. It's called Black Friday because it's on that day that the retailers finally begin to turn a profit and get into the black. I just would like to note that Black Friday started in the city of Philadelphia. Just a little note there. And this Saturday, November the 25th, is Small Business Saturday. It's a national event, and I want everybody to know I supported this event on our radio programs and along with other programs that I'm associated with when it first started back in 2010 as Small Business Saturday. It was started by American Express to support America's small business and businesses, and of course, promote the American Express credit card. So I urge everyone to support as many American-made products as you're out this coming weekend to go out on Black Friday or Small Business Saturday or anytime during the upcoming week of celebrations, which will be leading up to Christmas and the new year. And for the record, our special way to support small businesses throughout the year really started back in 2012, and it happens every first weekend of every month. That's the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It was our way to promote the small businesses that support our radio network. As several radio broadcasters tried to support their local businesses, and it grew to be a little more than that. And now it's getting better and better, and hopefully we'll be able to promote it even more as time goes on, because Just Small Business Saturday is once a year. It's really not enough for the retailers to get in the black. Well, as we celebrate Thanksgiving, I'd like to ask all of our panel members to let us know their thoughts on Thanksgiving and their efforts to promote America's movement. And of course, be open today as we have another open forum, and let's let it start off. I think we'll start off today with Mark. How is everything with you, Dr. Mark?
Great, Mike. Hello, Rich, Larkin, everybody, Henry, all our listeners. First, happy Thanksgiving, you know. And Mike, you asked, Thanksgiving's the time of year you remember family and friends and spend some time with them and try to, you know, not rush through the season. But you also mentioned Black Friday coming up, our biggest time for the Made in America team. And we've got our six locations. Actually, we left our Niagara Falls one open, so we're ready to go. This Friday, Black Friday to Christmas Eve, is 31 days, so we call it the 31-day run. And it is the time, Mike, you try to get in black. You know, it's what you kind of you wait for and work for all year. But we're ready to go. And Small Business Saturday is huge, and that was a great, like you said, launched November 27, 2010. We also have Cyber Monday, and our website start going. So it's our big time of year. We wait for it. It's exciting. A lot going on. We actually had snow up here in Western New York, and we're in the snow removal business with General Welding, so that's that adds more excitement, Mike. But a lot going on, a lot of good. But I tell our listeners, go out and do your part. Buy American, because it is the time to really give back, and you give back in so many ways by buying American products, not only to that retailer, to the vendors, to the manufacturers, everybody down the line, right back to, you know, all the checks. When I write for the Made in America store, go right back to these vendors, 100% in our country. And I think it's great, Mike. So great, great time of year.
Very good. Thank you so much, Mark, for opening up our broadcast. Dr. Rich Logis, how are you doing out there?
Hey, Michael, and good morning to everyone. Curtis, how you doing? And yes, happy Thanksgiving, a blessed Thanksgiving, Michael, to all of our listeners. And today is also in our history a dark day. It's the anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination, so we remember him as well today. And with everyone getting ready for Thanksgiving and family dinners, Michael, I just want to say a comment here before we really get started. I know that a lot of political temperatures and tensions are going to be really high tomorrow as we all sit around the dinner table. So I just want to offer a suggestion really for everyone, but particularly for Trump voters tomorrow, Curtis, when we all sit around the table. Let's all be nice. Let's please all be civil. Let's respect the fact that we have elections and we have this all these freedoms that many places around the world don't have. But the one thing that I'll recommend, Michael, to Trump voters is when we get into political discussions tomorrow, I think we need to set a ground rule right off the bat that's going to keep things civil and friendly and familial between us all. What we have to let everyone know, Curtis, is that, first off, we won and they lost. So we don't need to work with them. They need to work with us. And the reason for that is because of something that President Obama said in 2009, which is the truest, most accurate statement he ever said when he told a room full of congressional Republicans that elections have consequences. And he was 100% correct about that. And for 8 years, I told GOP voters, good people, many of them stay home, unfortunately, but I told them, President Obama is correct. And then in 2012, we did it all over again, and we did elections have consequences all over again, Michael. Well, fast forward to 2016. See, those elections still have consequences. Now, everyone will get a shot again in 3 years. Everyone will get a shot in 2 years. Some states next month, like in Alabama, they're going to have elections. So it's very important that we set the ground rule. We won and you guys lost. We don't need to work with you. You need to work with us, because elections do have consequences. So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Well, Curtis, your name's been mentioned a few times.
Your political affiliations. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, Mike.
Curtis, your name's been mentioned, so I'll call on you and then Larkin.
Hey, good luck with that. Happy Thanksgiving there. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. And let's all remember that we have so much to be thankful for. And, 50 years from now, or when we meet our Creator at the pearly gates, all of this stuff, which seems so important right now and is consuming, is going to be forgotten or irrelevant. So let's be civil to each other. Remember, love is the most important thing, and family is so important, and the most important thing being decent to your fellow human being, no matter who won, who lost. And I think if somebody brings up the political stuff, change the subject. Talk about the sweet potatoes. I don't know, but anyway, that might be the best way to keep some civility, keep the heat on the turkey rather than in the discussion. I wanted to thank everybody again. Is some news here. The U.S. International Trade Commission just yesterday has recommended putting tariffs on Samsung and LG washing machines, which have been flooding the U.S. market and threaten the jobs of all the good people working at the Whirlpool Corporation. We've talked about this before, that the Samsung and LG are good allies in South Korea. These are Korean companies, have been subsidizing the production of the washing machines that they then export to the United States. Basically, they've been exporting their unemployment to the U.S. by subsidizing these high-end washing machines and selling them at below the cost of production here in the U.S. In order to keep their people working. And in the past, it's been going on for years and years and years. They were producing them in South Korea. We put a sanction on them, so they moved production to Mexico, and then we put a sanction on that, so they moved production to China, and they've been playing whack-a-mole with this. Now, finally, the U.S. International Trade Commission says it doesn't matter where they're made. If Samsung and LG are importing these washing machines wherever they're made, there should be a tariff at 2.2% put on these. So what's likely to happen is, and it's already starting to happen, is that these companies are now talking about making the washing machines in the United States, to which we can all be thankful. There's something we can all be grateful about. So this is what happened with the Japanese automobiles back in the 1980s. Ronald Reagan suggested voluntary quotas on the number of Japanese cars that could be imported. Now, the Japanese want to sell as many cars as possible. God bless them. So what they decided to do is start making the cars at factories in the United States. And That worked out well for everybody. It was a win-win. Americans have jobs. Americans can buy as many Japanese cars as they want. The Japanese can sell as many cars as they want to Americans. So we'll hopefully that already they have started and have plans to build factories in the United States, Samsung and LG. And so that's moving forward. This is a direct result of the America First policies of President Donald J. Trump, that we have to look out for American workers, American businesses, and promote the interests of Americans. And so that's a good thing. If you're buying a Christmas present for somebody and you're buying a washing machine, maybe you want to buy a Whirlpool. Or else, wait till next year when you can buy a Samsung washing machine made in the USA.
And Curtis, I'd like to see that tariff be put into America's unemployment fund so that
That's
people
right.
who are out of work can benefit for as long as it takes to get some of these jobs back. And speaking of that, before I go to our excellent and very well-known panel member, Larkin Connolly, I would like to say that I'd like to see equal tariffs on imports and exports.
And Mike, I just have a question for Curtis. How you doing, Curtis? Welcome aboard. Great. Happy Thanksgiving. The that 2.5% tariff, was there never one for Samsung or LG before?
Was there? I'm sorry. Was there
was not a tariff before on them two items, Samsung or
LG? Well, they
LG?
Tried to impose it, but as I said, they would impose it based on country of origin,
okay.
And then what LG and Samsung would do is they would move production from someplace else. So instead of importing washers into the U.S. from South Korea, they'd import them from Mexico or from China to get around the tariff.
And now the International Trade Commission put it on the companies themselves, the manufacturers.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Well, that's new, right, by design? I mean, that's something different.
That is new, yes.
Yeah, that's exactly. Great. Okay.
Yeah.
Very well. Oh, I'm glad to hear that. See, big things can happen if we stay focused. It's a big one because, and by the way, if it's happening on this product, why not on other products?
Yeah, that could be the start to something major. You get the manufacturer and not the country so they can't hide.
Absolutely. Dr. Larkin Conley, how are you doing?
Good morning, Michael, and Mr. Andel, Rich Logis, Henry Chaplinsky, Curtis, just happy Thanksgiving to all of you. It's one of my favorite times of the year. It starts the holiday season out, which to retailers is truly the answer to whether or not there's going to be profit at the end of the year. Rich, I have to thank you very much for crafting my opening blessing at our Thanksgiving dinner table tomorrow night. When I tell my brother-in-law and my daughter and all of the rest of the family members that I have around the table that you lost, that reminder is only going to have them. I'm probably going to take a turkey leg right to the side of the head. But you know what? I'm going to have so much fun reminding them of that fact that it probably won't bother me. So, thank you very much for my opening salvo at Thanksgiving. I might not even wait for the dinner table. Why not just why not lay that on them as I'm giving them their first drink as they arrive? Here, loser, how about a martini? I love it. And I'll tell you why I love it the most is because I've licked some very, very deep wounds in the past, as has any moderate or conservative. And this is fun. I mean, politically... I'm having a good time. This has been a great year for me. It's been a mix of we have Donald Trump as the president. Who I'm telling you, last year at this time, if I would have suggested to you that Donald Trump was going to be the president, the only person who suggested he was going to be was my great guru, Simon Sinek. And he said Hillary Clinton is barking up the wrong tree, and she in fact was, and Donald Trump became president. And it's been a very, very interesting year. It's been a year of stuff happening that's never happened before. It's an outlook that's never been, we've never looked through glasses like the ones that Trump has given us. And I keep on reminding my daughter, who is the progressive, and I love her dearly and desperately, but our politics don't really match. But I've reminded her, every time I see her, I say, Liz, by the way, when is the last time that wacko in North Korea set one of his missiles? And, she said, well, it's been almost 2 months. And I said, well, I wonder, what does that mean? Does that mean that the strategy worked? And there's complete dead silence. Complete and total dead silence. It's been an interesting year, Curtis. No one has seen it from the inside like you have. And you just gotta, I can't wait for 2018. It's gonna be a great year. It's gonna be a different year. And it's gonna be we're going to be talking about things we never imagined that we'd be talking about, with approaches that we never thought we'd be talking about. And between the Me Too generation, and I've been personally molested by about six women. I'm not trying to make light of it, but I mean, it's going to be a very, very unique year. I'm really looking forward to it.
A very unique year. Maybe you'll be molested by Charlie Rose. That'll be a very unique year for you.
I woke up in the morning to see that, Curtis. I start my day. Charlie Rose and the two other people. I was amazed. I was absolutely amazed. I also, I'm going to build a moat around my house so nobody can attack me. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And listen, this movement is something that the country needed. Maybe not as I don't like anything that's radical. I think change comes, it kind of grows on us, and as we change from black to white, from gray to white, whatever, it should happen gradually, and we should learn from our mistakes, and it becomes a better world. This is pretty radical. It'll be an interesting year.
Larkin, I don't think that the way elections were run in the past will be able to be conducted the way they were because of the new things that have happened in America during the last year. I think that politicians are going to have to put up and not just do a lot of talking. They're going to have to do plans. I myself have major plans to ask all of the political people that come to me asking for some publicity or some support, exactly what are you going to do? It's great to show up at a campaign rally and have the person walk the rope line and everybody's cheering and the noise and the music is playing, and then they have to, oh, look at the clock, I got to run out the door. I think that's going to come to an end. I think people want to know exactly what's on that person's mind, what will they fight for, and one of the things they better be fighting for is things that the American people need now and should have had for the last 30 years, but it was taken away from them by poor leaders on every scale of the country, federal, state, and local level.
So everybody criticizes Donald Trump for the way that he says things. And every once in a while, I say to myself, you know, Mr. President, can we have been a little bit softer with the way we presented that? But he really has changed the dynamics. He has said things that have needed to have been said for a very, very long time. And to me, in my heart of hearts, that's why he got elected, because he said things that people have wanted to hear. They're different. They're strong. There's no question that there's an awful lot of power in the words that he says. He doesn't mince words. He's not a great orator. But there's so much substance in what comes out of his mouth, and that's just absolute fact.
Indeed.
You know, can I add a point to that? Guys, you mind if I just one last point on this, Curtis, because we want to get back to you here. And what I'm about to say is not, it's just my analysis, because I'm not looking to take credit with this, Curtis, but if you go back and listen to American Workers Radio broadcast during the primary and then leading up to the election, I'm happy to say, not for credit purposes, but thank God it happened the way it did, that I am on record on the show saying that not only did I believe that the candidate Trump would win the primary and be the nominee, but that he would be elected. And the reason I thought that was because I had a real, as I listened to people with the boots on the ground, voters, working people, families, and small businesses, I just felt like the dam had cracked between too much power, too much government, and the people, right? Those middle class, working people, small business people. And President Trump, as candidate Trump, obtained more votes in the history of the GOP primary than any other candidate in history. And I remember thinking, when this whole thing started to get real, because, look, honestly, Larkin, we talked about this on the show. We weren't sure where this whole thing was going to go when it first happened. But I remember thinking, as a hobbyist political analyst, Michael, that the candidate was a perfect storm candidate, someone with decades of name brand recognition, all more money than God, doesn't owe anything anyone, isn't owned by anybody, doesn't really care who's offended, and does another, you know, genuinely cares about the country, and last but not least, and most important, achieves something, Larkin, because when you talk about licking those wounds of defeat, he achieves something that the GOP has struggled with for years nationally. He turned out the vote. It is impossible to win Pennsylvania and Florida and Ohio and Michigan and North Carolina and Wisconsin. All those were swing states. It is impossible to win those states if the turnout is low outside of the big cities. Michael, if Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, if only residents of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh voted, Pennsylvania would be as Democrat as California and New York. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For my friends and our listeners in Texas, I've got some clients, Curtis, who listen in Texas. If only, well, that's a red state. Is it really? Because I actually think it's a purple state. Why do I think that? Because if only San Antonio and Houston and Austin and Dallas, and those are all good places, great places, if only residents of those four cities voted, Texas would be as blue as New York and California. So what happened in the perfect storm? The vote got turned out. People got off their butts. They showed up. They worked on the grassroots level where ultimately politics is won and lost. Because politics is like any other business, Curtis. It's sales. It's sales. That's what it is. It's like anything else. It's eyeball to eyeball. It's belly to button, belly to button. You pick the phone up. You talk to people. See, Mrs. Clinton didn't do that. What Mrs. Clinton did and what the DNC did is they had out of sight, out of mind. To use a football analogy, they just tried to run the clock out. That's what they tried to do. Whereas her opponent, all of us as a campaign, we didn't want to run the clock out. We wanted to run the score up. We wanted to attack. You know, one of my, I think, Michael, I would encourage everybody to go and watch the beginning speech of the film Patton. I watch that speech every single day. I mean, I know that sounds nuts, but I watch it every single day to get my day started. And one of the things, which is a real speech, and one of the things that General Patton says in there is he says to his troops, I don't want to get any messages that we are holding our position. We are not doing any such thing. We are constantly advancing. See, Larkin, that's how this thing's going to go. And look, I agree to an extent. Change shouldn't happen rapidly, especially when it comes to our Constitution. Now, there are some issues, Curtis, where I feel like the politicians have had enough time, health care being one of them, you know, our the size of our government. Dems and Repubs, man, they both love to spend. I know the Dems like it more, but they both like to spend. That whole dam collapsed. And the only question now is, are the Democrats and are what I call the et tu brute Republicans, are they listening to the voters? We're going to find out.
No.
And if we determine that they're not, we got to get off our butts. We got to get involved. We got to knock on doors, belly button to belly button. And we've got to elect officials who are going to stand by America first, economy, our sovereignty, and our Constitution. Elections have consequences. You know how many people told me after the election, Michael? Wow, you know what, Rich? I actually have a little bit more of my faith restored in our elections and our democracy.
And thanks to you. Thank you very much. Amen. Let me just say that your endorsement and your, I wouldn't call it a prediction, but your confidence and you going on the radio and saying Donald Trump will win, he will be the nominee, and he will win the election, that contributed to his victory, because the other side, as we saw through the corporate media, the Democrat-controlled media complex, continually tried to suppress the vote and convince people, don't bother to vote. Donald Trump's not going to win. Hillary Clinton has a 98% chance of winning, so don't even bother to come out and vote. So your voice steeled the resolve and put steel in the backbone of the Trump voters, the people who wanted a change and wanted to see the country go in a new direction, and you helped get out the vote by doing that. And for that, I have to say thank you. That's, and your analysis is exactly right. It's just spot on. People wanted a change. People who never voted before came out and voted. They were expressing their faith in the American system, the American electoral system, that they, and I dare say, this is perhaps the last chance. Because if Donald Trump fails, and the program that he campaigned on, and the promises he made, if the establishment and Congress and the swamp thwart him, people's faith in the entire electoral system and in the American system of representative democracy will be dashed forever. And that is a very frightening prospect, because it was Malcolm X who said, it's either ballots or bullets. And if people don't think they can make the change with ballots, it's Katie bar the door. And I it frightens me to think of what could lie in the future. So let's all pray. Let's be thankful for what we have, what we've achieved so far. And let's pray that we can get the change, that we can defeat the swamp and the establishment. And President Trump will be able to enact the agenda that he campaigned on, that millions of Americans came out and voted for, which is not divisive, it's united, uniting this great country, people of all colors, all races, all ethnicities, all classes, whether you're a business owner or a worker, whether you're a student or an adult, whether you're young or old, gay or straight, black or white, brown or yellow, we all are Americans. We all want to see this country succeed. We all want a better life for our children. And that's what makes us Americans. Unfortunately, the left, for so long, doesn't want an America. They believe, they've been preaching this idea. Somebody explained it very well the other day. I heard this speech. After World War II, the smart guys decided we can never have national socialism again. National socialism, that's what Nazi was, a shorthand for national socialism. Said we can never allow there to be national socialism ever again. And in order to accomplish that, we have to get rid of nationalism. Well, actually, what we need to get rid of is socialism. But they got it backwards. They said, we have to get rid of nationalism. Nationalism is bad. Nationalism is what leads to Nazism. And so, and that's completely wrong. Look, if nationalism is tied to a system like Nazi Germany, well, then nationalism is bad. But if nationalism is tied to something great and wonderful, like the ideals of America, self-government and freedom and private property rights and controlling your own destiny, well, then nationalism is a good thing. But they have now, they being the globalist establishment, says we have to get rid of nationalism and have international socialism. And all of these so-called free trade agreements have been essentially a redistribution of America's wealth to the rest of the world. Initially, the impetus was a good thing. We want to build up middle classes and prosperous societies in other parts of the world so that they don't become communists, so they don't, you know, become, you know, just horrible breeding grounds for whatever. And And we'll give them some of our jobs. We'll give them our industries. We'll give them, basically, we'll give them access to our markets so they can sell stuff to us and get rich by selling things to us, even though they won't let us sell anything to them. So that was the plan. But what it's turned into is it's turned into a global redistribution of wealth. The same way the Democrats here at home and the socialists and the redistributionists here at home want to redistribute the wealth from the wealthy people and give it to the poor people, because then they'll be, you know, it'll make them whole and we'll have equality and end income inequality and all that, and everybody will have the same. They want to do it on a global scale, and that's the transnational progressivism and the transnational socialism. They could not achieve socialism in this country. The people of this country, the voters of America, would not vote in that type of system. So they're trying to do it on a global scale through institutions like the United Nations, the World Trade Organization, and then these agreements like NAFTA, or thank goodness for Donald Trump, there were the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is like the European Union, where you dissolve the borders and you have the free movement of people, goods, and money throughout the world as if there are no nations. So their goal is to get rid of nations, national identity, and that way you can have a global redistribution of wealth and a global system. And lost in all of this is, well, who gets to make the rules for that global system? And it's always taken out of the hands of the representative parliaments or congresses of the nations. The rules for this global system is always done by some elite technocrats, whether they're sitting up there at Turtle Bay at the United Nations, or whether they're sitting in Geneva, or whether they're sitting in Brussels, or whether they're in a corporate suite, whether it's Wall Street or the City of London. Those are the people who get to write the rules for this global system that they envision, and we the people are left out of it. And you see the rebellion against it in Europe, where the people of Europe, Brexit, the people of Great Britain said, hold it, we've got the oldest parliament in the world. Let's not give it away to some technocrats sitting in Brussels. And let's not give it to Frau Merkel and let her decide what our immigration policy is. So we have to remember that nationalism is not a bad thing. America is great. Donald Trump said it, and that goes to the other point you made. He speaks plain English. He's not this great flowery orator. I'll admit, it's not the Gettysburg Address. It's not John Kennedy's inaugural speech that he delivers. But he speaks in a way that people understand. And he talks the way most people talk. And by doing that, he has exposed the distance between the political class and the people. These politicians speak in these crafted talking points, and they speak in this stilted language, and the reporters that cover it dutifully report it as if what they're saying is true, when they know it's not true and they know it's just rhetoric, but it's all make-believe. And Donald Trump was a voice of breath of fresh air and a little voice of truth, and God bless him for that. And yeah, he says some things that people might cringe over, but you know, so did my Uncle Harry. So what are you going to do about it?
You know, Curtis, I want to add one thing before
Curtis, thank you.
I want to say this to you, that Donald Trump won. As I go out and speak to people, because Democrats and Republicans both were tired of the status quo. When I talk to people, they say, well, I'm a Democrat, but I voted for Trump. So, Larkin, when you're speaking to your family, you have to mention to them that because of a very sizable amount of Democrats voting for Trump, he won in many areas of the state of Pennsylvania that normally went only for a Democrat, but they went Republican this time because they saw that America was living in a false economy for years, and they wanted somebody to come in and shake everything up. And this is what they got. They knew that Donald Trump was not, you know, some moral authority and some great person who's an orator. He's a person who's in business. He could put the claw down when necessary and give you a nice pat on the back when necessary as well. But people wanted change because they saw for themselves that their children and their grandchildren are going to really be way down on the totem pole as far as employment opportunities if we don't do something now. So I know that the major media, the news media, can't get their head on straight because they wanted things to be the way they were, and they don't like the idea of being shown by an outsider that the way things were done in America, just giving everything away to the American people, telling them that work was something, if you wanted to do it, that's fine, and giving everything around the world is no longer what we want to pay our taxes for. And live in the greatest country on earth, we should have every opportunity to have a job, well-being, and full-time stability.
Michael, can I ask Mark?
Yes.
Please remind us regarding succeeding and failing. Mark, can you please remind all of our listeners what you said at the beginning of the American-made movie? What you said?
No, I remember it distinctly.
Yeah, I'm trying, Rich, you know, basically to never quit. That we, the people, have just proven again that electing, Donald Trump was people got involved, and you just have to do what you believe in and carry that out. And I think it showed up big time where people, even with the Made in America movement, can really, really make change by doing their part, voting with their dollar, going out and not buying for the experience and just buying and realizing the effect and the power a person has, a consumer has.
It is one of the most powerful lines in that movie, which is a wonderful, wonderful movie. And Curtis, if you don't have it, I'll send it to you.
Oh, I do have it. I do have it. It's a wonderful movie.
It sets off the entire tone of the movie. Failure is not
an option. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's something an entrepreneur just lives with. Failure is not an option. I said, we've been to the moon. What can't we do? Curtis, if you could ever get that movie to the president, I think he would really appreciate it. We did show it in the Capitol building. We've been down to Washington with it. But it is a movie that's really has power. If you can get people to watch it, they walk away changed, and they really do. And it's, again, not political, metaphor is baseball, and it really can make change. And it's a positive documentary film.
I was talking to my friend who's a TV producer. He wants to do a Made in America TV show. And I said, well, you've got to talk to Mark Andahl. So I'll hook you up.
I wish at the end of that movie, when we aired it for the Philadelphia public and the theater was packed, when that movie was over, people stood up and started clapping. I said to myself, I wish Mark could be here to see this. But I'm sure you have seen it, Mark. I'm sure you've seen that reaction wherever the movie's been played. But I'm telling you, people rose to their feet and started to clap. It was an amazing reaction to a very, very simple statement about the condition of this country today.
Absolutely. It was unbelievable. I remember the first time we showed that in Philadelphia. I did try to get it on a PBS station. I'm not going to mention which station. Henry and I know very well. And the person who was the person who goes before this group who makes the selection just felt it was a little too much in one direction. It didn't address all things, and it was sort of not what I wanted to hear, and I couldn't believe it. And they said, well, they'll reconsider it again in the future. But the reason is it's pro-America. And it's telling America's consumers, no matter what anyone thinks, America's consumers are really the key to success. And as we enter this holiday season, I'm pleading with everyone. I know that you're going to get something for your family members and friends. Support your local businesses. I know that not everybody is featuring American-made at this time, but support your local businesses. And remember also that 60% of the American people right now, as we speak, are employed by small and medium-sized businesses. And those businesses have to survive. Every one of us sees a lot of the stores that have closed down, combined. It's because people are now moving to the net. They've moved out of the neighborhoods. Sometimes people say, I'm not buying it because it's not made in America. During this time of year, if you are planning to buy something, especially for a family or friend, look for American made. This is an opportunity for you as a customer to do a little speaking up to the manager, to the sales clerks, and also to the cashiers. Say, I'm disappointed because there's too much foreign made in this store, and that's not a benefit to you, me, or my family.
I'd like to add something to that. You raise a really good point. It made me think of something. That, look, the reason we support Made in America is the same reason we support small businesses and buying from small businesses. We say Made in America because we want to employ our citizens, our neighbors, our friends, the people down that we share this country with. And that's the reason we want to support small business. So even if something you're buying in that small business, maybe it's made in, maybe it's made in Japan, because as Mark has pointed out, it's hard to find anything that plugs into the wall that's made in America. But if you buy it from the small business, the neighborhood business, the business that's owned by a local person, you're keeping those people in business, and you're keeping that money circulating, more of your money circulating in your community, the same way as when you buy something made in the United States of America, you're keeping more of the money circulating in this country. Now, look, there's always going to be international trade and international trade in goods and services. A great example of this was when President Trump came back from his trip in Asia. He gave a briefing and he took a swig of water out of a bottled water, and it was Fiji water. Right? That's a big brand out there. And people were going crazy. The liberal media went nuts. Oh, my God, he's talking about his America First trade policy, and there he is drinking Fiji water. Well, the Fiji water is a company from America. A company from America brings in the water from Fiji because for some reason Fiji water's got a, I don't know, it tastes better. I don't know. Maybe it tastes like lemonade. I don't know, but it tastes better. But the American company is making money and employing Americans in the bottling plant by importing Fiji water. Right? And the same way, you make a chocolate bar, the chocolate is imported from someplace else. But you can still employ Americans. We're not against trade. Nobody's against trade. You can still employ Americans and increase the wealth in this country through imports. There's nothing wrong with that. And the same way, the small business on the corner you're doing yourself and your community a favor by keeping more of the money circulating here, even though not 100% of it is, because when you buy that bottle of Fiji water from the corner grocery store, some bit of that money goes back to Fiji to buy their water. But a good component of that stays right here in the neighborhood. On that point, there's when the president was in Asia, he was talking about our trade policy. He struck $300 billion worth of deals with these other countries that they're going to buy American goods. One of the key points he said is we're not going to have a one-way policy anymore where we open our markets and the other countries keep their markets closed. We open our markets to imports from these other countries, but those countries close their market and close their borders to imports from America. And the latest example of this now, this is the game that Japan played, Korea played, China is playing right now. And now there's a new bad actor, and that's India. India, we think of India with our call centers and with the H-1B workers to come here to replace American IT workers. They've got a whole new campaign, Make in India, and they're encouraging companies to make things in India to export to the rest of the world. But unfortunately, what's happening is if we try to sell things into India, there's incredible tariffs, incredible border duties, and it actually trickles down to each, because of the system, the way the system's set up in India, local states and cities and provincial governments add another layer of taxes and tariffs. It's a notoriously corrupt bureaucracy. It's an inefficient bureaucracy. I have dear friends who are Indians. They live here. They're from India and have been there for generations and all, and they complain about the bureaucracy of India, that it's notorious, it's famous, and so India ends up blocking American-made exports into India. At the same time, they're preaching, we're open for business, and everybody make in India and sell it around the world. So what President Trump says, and what everybody on this show says, is let's just have it fair and equal. If we have nothing against trade. We want to trade with the whole world. We want to sell and buy. But let's just be fair. Let's not have it be – it can't be one way.
And, you know, Curtis, you're right. Our whole theme is 50-50 balance.
Right.
If we can get 50% of our goods in another country, that would benefit. But when there's no way to get them in there, and many of the people that I see visiting Philadelphia, this historic district, they say, no, we don't see any American-made products in our stores. And they are coming from these various countries as visitors to America for a month or so. And I asked them point blank, how much American-made is available, and it's almost nil. Now, how do we continue to have all of their products featured at our stores, and yet they never see any of our products? Yes, it's true we maybe don't have a lot of the smaller items available, but why don't we have them? It's time for us to restore all those industries so that we can compete with around the world as well as supply America.
Well, the free enterprise system has to get back to work. And, you know, where there is demand, you show me a demand for orange widgets, and I'll open an orange widget plant right up the street, and we'll start manufacturing widgets. So it's, you know, there's a very interesting balance there. But I wanted to say to Curtis's point, and this really kind of cracked me up, I thought it was the American press, showing their stripes. They could find nothing to criticize Trump about on his Asian journey, which I thought was an extremely successful trip. And I think he came back with a hell of a lot more than he took on the trip. And all of the naysayers, all they could come up with, my favorite Trump hater and naysayer, a very, very dear friend of mine, could criticize Trump on no basis other than he sure does like pomp and circumstance. Really? That's all you have? That's the length and breadth of the bullets you're going to fire? I mean, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But they had nothing. They had nothing because it was a very successful trip for us.
And, you're right, Larkin, in this respect especially, that he went over there with a message. No more one-sided. We buy everything from you. You buy nothing from us. That's one thing that people really were pleased with. And nobody over there, if you noticed, on the trip, was really pushing back on that. Like, oh, no, we're not going to do that. They have to, because now it's seen from the top down to the people who pay the taxes and need the jobs, that there has been too much catering to around the world and not enough attention to America.
Hey, Michael, did you see the link I sent you on the KPRC? It's TV2 out of Houston last week, Mario
yes.
Diaz.
Oh, that was great.
You know, he called me up again. He was out of New York City 3 years ago. He moved down to Houston, where he was born, actually, from, and there's nine investigative journalists. And they broke into the premier attraction at the air shows is the U.S. Thunderbirds and the Navy Blue Angels, and they found out all their clothing was made overseas, which the Blue Angels, the veterans, of course, went crazy. He reopened it up because he found out also on the Marine site they were selling forced labor from Pakistan, T-shirts being made. But and Curtis, I don't know if you've got it, but it's very interesting. It hit hard. Very good interview. I just remembered about that, guys, but I wanted to get your opinion on that. That's where our top veterans are, air shows and whatnot. But I basically was brought in that you can buy, basically a garment made here and still make money at $25 to $30 an hour a piece for a T-shirt.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, you can.
Well, there's been no national cheerleader for this for a long time. We've been cheering, and small voices are now becoming bigger voices. But they all need somebody at the top to be the focal point. And as we get near the end of our broadcast, I want to ask for some Thanksgiving wishes from all of you to our listeners. Mayan is thanks to everybody for helping us promote November as American Made Month and the entire Buy American Made campaign. When you're out shopping this weekend and every weekend of the year, look for American Made labels, because more and more of them are starting to pop up. Mr. Logis, what would you like to say as a closing remark?
Everyone, thank you again. And I wish everyone, Michael, a very relaxing and blessed Thanksgiving. Look forward to talking to everyone next week, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. And Dr. Larkin.
Yeah, you know what? I have a special Thanksgiving wish to Mark Andel, his wife, his family, and to one of the most dynamic Americans I think I've met in a long time, his dad. A very, very happy Thanksgiving to you, Mark, and thank you very much for what you do. Curtis, Rich, Michael, and Henry, please have a great Thanksgiving, and remember, family is everything.
Wonderful. Very, very well said. And don't forget, if you're looking for something, get it online now. Go to madeinamericastore.com. Mark Andel.
Yeah, Michael, I'd like to thank you for bringing us all together, our whole crew every day. All our listeners, have a great Thanksgiving. Stay consistent with our message. Continue to raise awareness and educate. And thank you all. We're all helping to rebuild the American dream.
And Dr. Curtis Ellis.
I want to thank Mark, and I want to thank you, Michael, for bringing us all together and for hanging in there. When everybody said this is not the way, not can't be done, you knew it was the right thing to do. Made in America by American.
Thank you all. God bless. Best wishes from all of us in the Blihosh and also from Henry Chaplinsky's family. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I'll be looking forward to talking with you in my travels. Have the very best. Hope all of us will be back together again next Wednesday at 11. Have a great one.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Bye now.